Covering the Western Hockey League from south of the border, this is the U.S. Division Podcast. Welcome to episode 2 of the U.S. Division Podcast. My name is Scott Sepich. I have made it to episode 2. I did not pull the plug on myself after one episode, so patting myself on the back for that. Our guest today is going to be Annie Fowler, the Tri-City Americans beat writer for the Tri-City Herald. She'll be joining me in a minute. I want to thank everybody who listened to the first podcast with Andy Eyde about the Seattle Thunderbirds. Thanks for the feedback. I do appreciate it. You can follow along on the website, theusdivision.com. That is the US division, all one word, no punctuation, .com. You can also follow me on Twitter at ssepich, at S-S-E-P-I-C-H, and also email me at scott.sepich@gmail.com. I'm also pleased to announce that the podcast is now going to be available on iTunes, so you can now go into iTunes and the podcast. You can search for the U.S. Division. That will come up, then you can subscribe, and then every time I add a new podcast, it will automatically go right into your iTunes, so that's going to be a good way to follow along if you don't want to keep checking back at the website, so I encourage you to subscribe that way via iTunes. All right, joining me now is Annie Fowler of the Tri-City Herald. She's in her 12th season covering the Tri-City Americans. Thanks for joining me, Annie.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Wanted to get into a little bit before we start talking about this year. Wanted to get a little bit into how last year ended and sort of thoughts on, I know that Justin Fazer was such a big part of the team last year. How much are the Americans going to miss what he brought to this team going forward?
Oh, it is. His loss is really going to be felt on the ice and in the leadership role. He was a very emotional player, and I mean, he's not the rah-rah kind of thing, but he gave 100%. He expected that of you. You know, he wore his heart on his sleeve when he was out there on the ice, and you know, you don't find guys like that every day. And he played 321 consecutive games to set a record. You just don't find guys with that kind of commitment and that kind of drive. I need a night off. I'm hurt. I'm sore. I'm whatever. He's not that guy. He's going to give you everything he has every night. And to replace that, you just can't. I mean, he's going to be sorely missed. And, you know, but there are guys like Jesse Mitchum and Dryden Dow. You know, they brought a lot, you know, in their own way as well. And, you know, Dryden was a great D-man. You know, Jesse brought a little bit of everything to the game. So, you know, everybody's loss is, you know, going to be felt, but particularly Justin.
Yeah, Mitchum actually was somebody I thought was really a good player the second half of the year last year. I think he had a stretch there where he scored like 14 goals in 16 games. He was almost keeping up with Ty Ratty for a while there. Go ahead.
He's in the Vancouver camp right now. The Canucks, they invited him to camp actually last year. He couldn't do a whole lot because, you know, he'd had his Achilles tendon severed and he'd have it repaired. They knew he couldn't do a lot, but he went into camp, did what he could. He came in here last year, the first probably month or 6 weeks of the year. You know, he was still trying to get that scar tissue to loosen up so he could play, you know, like he should. And then he did have a really good finish to the year. The Canucks invited him back to camp. It's all a matter now of, you know, what they'll do with him, whether they'll sign him, send him to the AHL, just say thanks for coming, you know. But, you know, he's another kid that he has such a passion to play. And he doesn't have quite the talent as Justin, but, you know, everybody offers their own thing, you know. And so everybody's game is different, but everybody still has something worth, you know, something too.
Yeah, and obviously he's more of a tough guy than Fazer was.
Yeah, Justin would, he could get in your face if he wanted to, but Jesse was more the equalizer, you know, and kind of just diffuse a few situations and, you know, drop the gloves if he had to. But he realized that he had a scoring touch to his game, and he was much more effective on the ice than in the penalty box. And that showed the end of the year when he quit taking the stupid penalties or looking for fights or, you know, drew it up and just because a guy wanted to. He skated away from a few guys last year just saying, you know what, you're not worth it. I'd rather play for 5 minutes than sit for 5 minutes. So, and it made his game better.
And going back to Fazer a little bit, you know, there's always thoughts about, you know, what does most valuable player mean? Is it best player? Is it most valuable? It's hard to argue, though, that there was a more valuable single player to any team in the league last year than Fazer. And he was recognized for that in the Western Conference, but didn't win the league-wide award. I don't really know Adam Lowry as much as I know Fazer from seeing him, but it seems like Fazer kind of embodied the idea of a valuable player to a team last year. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, and for me, you know, I'm sure Adam Lowry is a great player and a great guy, but, you know, I don't know him. I didn't get to see him play. But, you know, he had 18 points less than Justin. He was 12th in the league in scoring. Justin was 4th. And at the end of the year, about mid-January, when Eric Conley got hurt, Justin literally put this team on his back and carried him the rest of the way. I mean, a good portion of his points came the last, you know, third of the year when they needed that, you know, confidence that, you know, with your goalie gone and, you know, you have a couple of guys that are like, what do we got now? And, but, you know, Justin made his team okay. You know, he scored those points. They won 40 games last year. But if not for him, they would not have won those 40 games. And when you look at the true embodiment of what an MVP is, it's Justin Fazer. And no disrespect to Adam Lowry, but to me, you know, if you're 12th in the league in scoring, you are not the MVP of the league. I am sorry, unless you're a D-man. But, you know, that just kind of is the way it is. And, you know, you can't go back. You can't redo it. And it is what it is. You know, I'm sure Justin's feelings were hurt a little bit, but in his heart, he knows what he did, and that's what matters. And the fans here in the Western Conference know what kind of player he is. And, you know, a lot of people, not just from Tri, but, you know, other teams, thought it was, you know, it was a sham. How could that be? You know, but we don't vote. We don't have a say. We just write it and move on. So, but it was disappointing. And I'm sure it was for everyone. They just don't come out and say it publicly. So,
what's Justin doing now? I know that he originally had committed to play college hockey up in Canada, but then I heard he also got a pro invite. What's he doing right now?
Well, he was going to play at St. Xavier, which is where Drew Alves is playing goal now, and they were going to be teammates again. And then Scott Beattie, who was an assistant here for a couple of years, took a head coaching job in Switzerland, and he invited, you know, Justin to come play for them, and, you know, Justin jumped at the chance. And he's doing, you know, from what I hear from his good friend Mitch Topping here, is that, you know, he's doing really well. He really likes it there. And I know it's, you know, Scott Beattie being an assistant coach here and coaching Justin for a couple of years, he knows what kind of kid he is. And, you know, it must have been a player he thought his team needed, you know, that, you know, just his personality, his leadership, his drive, his commitment. You know, like I said, you don't find kids like him every day.
Yeah, it seemed strange to me that a guy that had the success he had in the WHL wouldn't at least get some opportunity somewhere to play professionally right away. So it's good that he got that chance.
Yeah, he got an invite to the, you know, Portland Pirates camp at the end of last year, went in for last little bit of the season in the playoffs, and, you know, he did well, but apparently not enough for them to ask him back again.
Looking forward a little bit now to this year, Fazer obviously going to be very missed. What's the general outlook? I mean, I know you have a guy like Connor Rankin, who was a 30-goal scorer last year, but other than that, it seems like a group that's a little light on scoring. So where is this team going to get goals? Who's ready to break out maybe and have a big year offensively for this team?
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually had a talk with Connor today, and, you know, he admitted this is a very young team, and it's going to take a group effort to, you know, get some things done. You know, Connor had 32 goals last year. Parker Bowles had 21. Brian Williams had 20. Bo McHugh had 17, but he only played 50-some games because he was hurt for a bit. Parker Bowles is out until November. He had some shoulder surgery in the offseason, and he won't be ready to go till maybe about Thanksgiving. So it's going to be kind of a, you know, a scary little situation for a while. Connor and Parker and Brian all skated on the same line from about Christmas to the end of the year, and that's when Connor's game really kind of came alive. And so he and Brian are skating together again. They've been working with different guys, Phil Tott and, Bo McHugh and a couple others on that line, just to kind of see how they mesh. But, there's some young kids that have shown some promise, and then coming back, Lucas Nichols, Marcus Messier, they picked up Taylor Vickerman from Vancouver. They all have their attributes. They all can score. But, scoring 12 goals a year is not going to cut it. Everyone's going to have to step up. And, I think the defense is going to have to be solid. Goaltending's going to have to be solid because they're not going to score 4 or 5 goals a game.
Yeah, I guess you never know with young guys what you're going to get out of them.
And adding to, some of the new kids coming in, Ty Comrie, who is Eric Comrie's younger brother, he was one of the top scorers in the preseason. He only had one goal, but, assist-wise, he, really can make the plays, and he's got good vision on the ice. He, makes good passes. He sees things really well. But in some games, too, his weakness, which is his size, has been exposed a little bit. And, you play a little rough and tumble with him, and, he just can't be the player that he wants to be. So, that's going to hurt a little. And then they made an off-season trade for Jesse Astle, kind of a Mitchin type of player. He played at Kelowna, and he was at Saskatoon. And, he can be that equalizer for you. He's not afraid to, put a fist in your face. So, he could be a very valuable player, but he can also put the puck in the net. So, he is a threat. So you have to kind of watch out for guys like him.
And if Zach Ewan comes back, then you do have an extra overager there. I know Phil Tott has had some injury issues. Is he looking like he's ready to go full speed this year? And what do you think is going to happen if they do have to make a decision?
Well, right now, we haven't seen hide nor hair of Zach Ewan back from camp yet. Michael Flutner did return last night, and so he will be available this weekend. Eric Comrie is not back yet, but he, from what I hear, should be back the middle of the week. But with the 20s, I think because they didn't know what the situation would be with Zach, that, Bob thought he needed to bring in another player. They released Tyson Dahlman last week, and so that brought him down to 4. They traded for Jesse, and they paid a decent price for him. Phil was already on the list. Phil played just 15 games last year. He got a concussion. He, waited and waited and waited, and then at Christmas he went home and didn't come back. He couldn't get, back to where he needed to be, and now he is. And, I talked to him the other day, and, he said he felt fine. He's taken some hits. He's, been okay. But you don't know that if you cut a guy like Jesse Astle loose and then 10 games into the season, Phil takes another hit, it's kind of like the boxer with the glass jaw, is that going to happen again? So you just have to, you have to look at what the team's needs are first and then if Zach comes back. So you don't know, but I'm glad I don't have to make that decision.
Yeah, it seemed like when they made the Astles trade that they were giving up enough for him that it seemed weird just to bring him in and not have him on the team. Because sometimes teams will take a flyer on a 20-year-old, bring him into camp, and see what happens. I mean, Lucas Walter came here to Portland and went to camp but didn't make it. But with the Astle situation, it seemed like that was an actual trade made with the purpose of actually keeping him on the team. So that's where I thought it was.
And with Phil, you want to give him an honest shot. He did everything he needed to do to come back. He came back in shape. He, I think, put on a little bit of size from, what I remember him being last year to this year. And he's a little more mature, but, it's going to be the grind of the season. And, can you take that kind of punishment? He's not built the same as Jesse is. And, so when you take that into consideration, and Jesse offers you something that really no one else on the team has. I mean, there's some little scrappy guys. Brian Williams, he's the smallest dog in the fight, but I tell you what, he'll go after it for you if you want him to or if he needs to. And, but, you know, Jesse just offers that size, that presence that, you know, we just don't have here with any other player. And you need that, you know, at least once. So.
Well, you need somebody who might want to drop the gloves every once in a while, because without Walter and Mission there, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of guys back that are really willing, or, you know, they've shown in the past that that's the kind of thing they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, you know, sometimes, you know, they call them enforcers, but now they're more kind of like equalizers, because sometimes if you have a reputation, you can just kind of skate toward a situation and guys will just back up and go because they don't want a piece of you. And, you know, back in the day when Cam McCaffrey was here and he was a trade from Kamloops back in the day, I mean, he would even come within 5 feet of the situation and guys would just go. No one wanted a piece of him. And it wasn't like he was huge or big or anything, you know, but he had that reputation that, you know, one punch from him, you'd be feeling it 2 weeks down the road. So let's just move on and let's play hockey. So, you know, you just, you get those guys, you know, and sometimes your reputation precedes you, and that's all you need.
So who else? And you talked about Ty Cromery a little bit as a newcomer. Who are some other rookies? I mean, now Taylor Vickerman has come from Vancouver in a trade. Who are some other new faces who are going to get a chance to play a little bit this year?
Well, they've kept a few. Brandon Carlo is a D-man. He came in a little bit last year, but being a U.S. kid, he could really only join in for the playoffs. Parker Wyerspoon, who's Tyler's little brother, is in camp and looks to stay. He's a very good young D-man. He came in a couple of times during the season and for the playoffs. You get a couple of forwards. Braden Purcell was here for a couple games last year. It seems like everybody came in last year for a few games because there were so many injuries. And Evan Sarthau in goal, he played down with what used to be, well, there's the LA Junior Kings now, but LA Selects. But he played on the same team as Ty Conley. And, you know, he's a very good young goalie. He's from Black Diamond, Washington, and lived with the Comrades when he played down there. So, you know, there's that closeness there. But he seems to be battling Troy Tromley pretty well for that backup goalie job. And, you know, that's going to be a tough call there, too. And, you know, so, I mean, he's held his own. He's done pretty well for 16. He's kind of a rather small kid as well. He's, you know, doesn't have a lot of presence in net yet, but, you know, he's barely 16 years old. So, you know, you goalies don't develop the same rate as, you know, some other players. So, but, you know, when you look at this team, it's going to be, there are going to be a lot of fresh faces. And it's going to be hard to, you know, really kind of pick some names out until, you know, they get a few games into the
right, right, place. Right. I do want to get into Comrie and the goalie situation. I remember last season you had an interesting goalie situation early in the season with Comrie played, I don't remember exactly how many games in a row, but he played, what, the first 20 or 22 games without even taking a minute off, and you had a kid named Brendan Feeblecorn there who, by all appearances, just sounded like he had enough of sitting on the bench. Is that kind of what happened there?
Yeah, he, you know, when they sent out a press release, it was, you know, less for personal reasons, but he did play a few games, or in a few games, you know, kind of a little bit of garbage time, as they call it. He did get a couple of starts, and he did have a couple of wins, but you got a young kid like Eric Comrie, and, you know, he served his time on the bench behind Ty Rimmer, and, you know, you've put a lot into this kid and time and effort and everything else. I mean, he is a good goalie. And, but Brendan felt that he was better than that and, you know, asked to be released. And so they brought in, Luke Lee Knight, who was cut at the beginning of the season in favor of Brendan Feeblecorn. And he came in and, you know, for the role that they asked him to play, he did it well. He was a great teammate. He was a funny guy, always had a smile on his face. I mean, he's a kid that you like to have in the locker room. And for him, it's like he just enjoyed being on a team. He likes the camaraderie of the players. You know, he likes to play too. And but when Eric got hurt, and then they brought in Troy Tromley, you know, then you know he won his first 6 starts. You know, it was kind of hard to pull him out of net. And then he had a couple of really big losses. And then he and Luke started sharing some time again. But you know, Eric had his surgery. He's 100%, you know, and I'm sure that if he wasn't doing well in Winnipeg, they'd have sent him back already. So, you know, and Coach Sutter had some really good things to say about him when they had the World Junior Camp, and that's hard to get as well. So, you know, it's just, you know, but Eric is, you know, he doesn't have the size that, you know, people have seen out of some former goalies here, you know, like Price and Pickard. You know, Owsley was a small kid too, but Eric, you know, he has the focus and the vision. He's had the best training available, you know, and some of this, you know, the training and stuff that he's been able to take advantage of, you know, they didn't even have when Carey Price was 16 or 17 years old. So, you know, it's all to the benefit of him that, you know, they've been able to, you know, his parents have either been able to provide that for him, or the Americans bringing in, you know, Lyle Mast, who is a top goaltending coach. And, you know, he just has a lot of opportunities. Some of the other guys didn't in the past. And so to his benefit, you know, it's been good. And Eric is a real team guy. And it's like, you know, he puts team first. You know, it's game day. It's all about the game. There is no, he doesn't answer his phone. He doesn't answer any texts. He doesn't really even look at the email. No tweets, no nothing. You know, it's all about the game on game day. So you're not going to find another kid like that. So it's a throwback.
It had to be just devastating for him last year to have to miss the last half of the season, especially in a draft year and everything that goes along with that. It was really sad news when it happened.
And it was, you know, but it was something that, I mean, it wasn't, you know, something that, well, we hope the surgery fixes it, or, you know, we hope the ligaments or muscle pull together. It was more on the end of the femur that goes in the ball and socket. He had a little tiny, like, bone spur on each side. And whenever he'd go down into a butterfly or make a move, those little tiny bony protrusions would catch on the ligaments and muscles in his hip, and it would hurt. And so those got shaved off, and, you know, he did months of rehab, and, you know, now you would never know. I mean, like I said, if Winnipeg didn't think he was doing well, they'd have sent him home by now. So, you know, he has really come a long way. And he came back during the playoffs just to kind of be with the guys. And it was really hard on him to not play. And you could see it in his face, you know, but he wasn't, he couldn't have played. I mean, he was just so fresh out of surgery then. You know, been about a month and a half. And, you know, he wasn't ready yet, but you could tell the pain on his face that, you know, he so wanted to play. And but he's ready now, and he's just like, you know, let's go. From the day he got back to camp, let's go. So
it was funny, and I was going back to the goalies last year again. Two of the best goaltending performances that I saw last year, ironically, were by Luke Lee Knight and Troy Trombley in Portland. One of them was Luke Lee Knight in a game that I think it was around Christmas time, where Portland outshot Tri-City, I think, something like 47-13, and the Ams won the game 3-2. And the Luke Lee Knight, I was just unconscious the entire night. And then there was a game later in the season where Trombley played, and the Ams actually came in and won.
He shut him out, I believe.
No, it was a game where the Ams scored, I think it was like a 6-1 game or something like that. It was the worst loss Portland had all year. And this is kind of funny that a team that you think of Eric Comrie as being the guy, and then the two times that were probably the most impressive performances of the year that I saw were by the backups. So,
you know, and I considered Luke and Troy like flea market finds. You know, they're that masterpiece behind that really ugly dog painting or something.
Right.
They came out of nowhere, and, you know, between the two of them, they won 20 games. And, you know, you can't ask for much more than that. I mean, they're kids who were backups on their junior A team that were kind enough to say, okay, sure, what the heck, I'll come down to try. You know, but they did their jobs. And Luke, he was kind of like the kryptonite for the Spokane Chiefs. And had he not have been hurt in the playoffs, they might actually have beaten Spokane.
Now, one thing I wanted to touch on, and I know it's something that I saw, that the Americans seem to be signing more and more American-born players. I know it's something that Portland's been doing the last few years, and some of the other teams. Victoria has actually been in on this a little bit. Do you feel like there's a deliberate attempt by the team to really scout out American players, that or this is just kind of the way things are today, that there are more better U.S. players and they're just happen to be going after them?
Well, you know, I think Bob kind of sets a trend a little bit in the league because, you know, like 10 years ago, he went into Winnipeg year after year after year. You know, he got the Hughes, the Shinneman, the Wilgoshes. You know, he started out drafting Jonathan Toews, who ended up not coming here, but that was kind of the beginning of it. And you see all these other players coming out of there. And, you know, he kind of started there. And then, you know, the trends kind of shift a little maybe to BC or Alberta. And, you know, a couple years back-to-back, you know, you have Yoon and Rankin out of British Columbia. And now, you know, the top players or some of the top players are coming out of the California programs and or even in Colorado. And so I think what Bob does is, you know, he and his scouts, they kind of, I think, track the trends a little bit, you know, which teams are doing really well, or, you know, you get a call from someone saying, hey, you know, have you seen this guy? Or you get a U.S. scout saying, hey, we really need to take a look at this kid. And then you see this kid, then you see his teammates, and you just kind of think, well, you know, hey, they work really well together. We could take them both if we could work that out in the draft. And, you know, sometimes I think Bob finds these little pockets of players, you know, by like a phone call from somebody or seeing one at a tournament and then wanting to see him again and then he sees teammates and stuff. And so I don't think it's kind of a deliberate thing. I think he, you know, who's playing well now. It's kind of like a fashion trend, you know, we're good in Winnipeg now. Now we're kind of moving to California a little bit. And, you know, probably in 2 years, you know, Alberta will be the hotbed or something. So, you know, I think it all just, but, you know, you know, just on a whim, you know, maybe a former American player or something happened to go see some, you know, friend's kid play and say, you know, call up and say, hey, I don't know if you've heard of these guys, but man, they got a couple of really good players. And, you know, sometimes that's all it takes. And, you know, Bob's willing to, you know, take a tip from anyone, I think, and just, it doesn't hurt to go look. And sometimes it's, you know, worth your efforts when you get, you know, an Eric Comrie and even a Bo McHugh. I mean, he was a Montana kid. Now his parents live in Colorado, but, you know, he was kind of one of those out-of-nowhere kind of players, and, you know, he was a player. So he just, you know, Brandon Carlos from Colorado, you know, he's going to be a great D-man by the time his career is over. So you take what you get, and, you know, sometimes I guess it doesn't matter where they're from. It's just the luck of the draw.
And you've actually got a fairly decent youth program going on in the Tri-City now. Like, I know that there's a NORPAC team there and some other youth hockey going on there. Are there players, I know Taylor Vickerman is from there, are there other players coming up out of the system there that might be WHL caliber players in the future?
There were a couple of local players invited to camp this year. They weren't quite the caliber as the WHL, you know, generally has. You invite them to camp, you know, it's kind of a, you know, goodwill gesture, and it's like, hey, sometimes you don't know what you're going to find. You know, Jason Reese played, he was from the Portland area, but he played here in the Tri-Cities in the junior programs, and, you know, look what he ended up being. Spokane had the Compton, Jeff Compton. He was from West Richland. Well, the Americans didn't draft him, but, you know, he got drafted by Spokane, and he had a great career there. So, you know, every once in a while, there's a diamond in the rough. This isn't really, you know, a hotbed of, you know, youth hockey where you're going to find tons of really top-end players, you know, like you would in, say, Lethbridge or Red Deer or, you know, Vancouver. But, you know, there's some opportunities for some kids, but it also takes a lot of money and time and patience on the parents' part, too, that, you know, you have to be able to travel and play in these tournaments. You have to play against the better kids, and that means going to, you know, Canada or California. And, you know, if you don't do those things, it's not going to happen for you. So, and a lot of times here, it's limited by, you know, the economy and stuff like that. And, you know, we do have a NORPAC team, but a lot of those are kids that, you know, they can make it at this level. And you don't want to, you know, say that they're bad players. It's just that, you know, there's levels of talent and, you know, there's just hasn't reached this point yet.
Yeah, well, I know around here, like, there's limited options around Portland, and I know that a few guys who have, you know, done well have usually moved away from here before even going to WHL, like Trevor Cheek, who played for Vancouver and then for Edmonton. He's from Portland, but he actually moved away to Arizona when he was 14 to play for a better program than he could find here. So it still seems like most of the players, or a lot of the players from the Northwest, still have to do things like that in order to find the real high competition.
And you really do. And, you know, there are some people here that, you know, their kids are billeting, you know, with families and stuff in British Columbia to play up there. And, you know, it's a hardship. You're away from home. You're 13, 14 years old. But if you want to try and have a hockey career, that's what you have to do. And like I said, it's hard on families. It's hard financially. And, you know, some teams you pay to play. Like we have the NORPAC team here. Those players pay $5,000 a year to play on that team. That's a lot of money. And it's hard to justify that sometimes, you know, and you hate to tell your kids, sorry, we cannot afford for you to do this. You know, let's play soccer, it's cheaper.
Yeah, there's a NORPAC team around here too, and you have to pay $5,000-$6,000 or whatever to play, and it's funny, you know, because there's obviously been this whole thing about, are the CHL players being compensated fairly and all those kinds of things, and I say, well, at least they're not paying $6,000 a year to play, in some leagues.
You know, when that whole thing came out last year about trying to get the players union and everything, you know, I talked to some of the American players that had been in the league for a few years, and I said, you know, are you for this, against it? And they said, we have been treated fairly, and we've probably been treated better than a lot of players in the league playing here in Tri. We don't need a union. We don't need anything. We have everything that we need here. We're well taken care of. And it's like they say, they talked to all these players, and there wasn't one player in Tri that had ever been contacted by those people. It's a good thing it didn't, you know, progress any further than what it did.
That was my experience. I had the same experience talking to kids here in Portland, that they didn't really seem interested in it. And that seems to be, I really can't find any player on record who said anything, who really said that they needed this kind of thing.
Well, and they say, look at all the money they make off of these players. You know, if you ask these WHL teams how many of them turned a profit last year, you'll be lucky to find a couple that broke even, maybe one or two that made a little bit of a profit. But a lot of these WHL teams, they don't make money, or they don't make a ton of money. If that was the whole idea behind it all, there wouldn't even be a WHL. There wouldn't be a CHL. I mean, you cannot be in this to make money. You're in it to break even. You make the playoffs. That's where you make your money. I tell you, there's probably in the 12 years that I have been here, there isn't one player that played in Tri that would say, I hated it there. We had one Euro, I take that back. But, you know, I think just because, you know, sometimes you get the Euros, they're not quite used to everything here.
Right, they're not quite going to.
You know, you just kind of, you know, move on from there. But, I mean, you get a guy like Drew Owsley, who got traded to Prince George. You know he did not want to go. You get a guy like Ty Rimmer, who got traded from Prince George to here. Oh, my gosh, he loved it here. Then he gets traded to Lethbridge. They come back to play Tri that next year. He sees his name on the wall because there's a wall down by the dressing room that has, you know, records and all this kind of stuff. He sees his name on there on, like, four different plaques for goalies. And, I mean, he's tearing up because, wow, this is awesome that I could be part of all of this. A month later, Lethbridge is putting up a big wall up outside of their dressing room with all of the major accomplishments throughout the years. And I think Ty probably had a great deal to do with that. And, but you know, it's kind of that thing, you treat them like professionals, they play like professionals, you honor the things that they have done. And it means a lot. I mean, players come through, the new kids, and they look at these things, they look at the records on the wall, who's played here before them, the numbers that they've posted. And I mean, these kids are in awe. I mean, and Carey Price came in, he was here for rookie camp and a little bit of main camp. And I mean, you want to talk starstruck kids who are 15, 16 years old, and we have a whole group of them here. So, but you know, you get former players to come back. Shinneman, Huseman stop in for a few days before they go to their camps. And Ole and Stu, Stu spent a week here working with the kids because Jim was at a clinic. You know, my gosh, they were on cloud nine. I mean, those are the things that mean a lot to kids that come in here. And, you know, just the success that they've had. And, you know, it's just, you look at the history, and that it means a lot. And, you know, I can look at those walls and I can see players, and I was fortunate to cover the Carey Price. He's the Brennan Schinemans, Adam Heisman's. And, you know, I look back at their accomplishments and I'm like, wow, yeah, I remember that. So, you know, I've been pretty blessed here that I've got to see some really good things.
And some of those players you talk about that had great careers, and obviously being a reporter, you get to talk to them a lot, get to know them a little bit. One guy, I did want to kind of touch on this because I wanted to get your take on Brendan Schinemann had a reputation around the league and that of being someone who embellished a little bit too much. Where did you stand on that, having watched him for, you know, pretty much every game and seen him kind of progress through the league? Why did he develop that reputation, and was it fair or unfair that he did?
You know, to me, if you get tripped, how can you embellish? Really? Either you got tripped or you didn't. They're not going to call it tripping if it's an embellishment. Once you call the embellishment and not the trip. You know, so to me, you can't have it both ways. You know, it's like you got hooked and you got, you know, it's kind of like you can't have both penalties. You know, they're not offsetting penalties kind of thing in football, you know. And so if you get tripped, you get tripped. You fall, you go down. It's like, so he tripped me, you called the trip, but then you called the embellishment. Well, I tripped, I fell, because he hooked my skate. So how in the heck is that embellishment? Because it's not like the other guy got 4 minutes and you got 2 minutes for embellishment. I mean, to me, it's like you can't have both. But, you know, just the style of play that he had and the speed that he played the game with, it sometimes, if he did get tripped, he was moving at such a fast pace that it looked like he did that. But Brendan's not a dirty player. Brendan is not one that's going to, you know, ruin the integrity of the game to try and get anything extra. I mean, he's a very down-to-earth kid. He's very humble. And for him to have been suspended for 12 games that year for, you know, embellishments and all this, well, he got 12 games for running the kid into the boards.
But
then
he
did get suspended for, you know, a couple of games for excessive embellishment and all this. And it's like, okay, you're going to trip me, you're going to run me into the boards, you're going to do whatever. This player did that to me. So how did I embellish anything? You know, it's not, if I'm going to embellish, then he had to have done something seriously wrong. But to me, an embellishment penalty is just a crap penalty. And, you know, take it out of the game, because what does it really do? I mean, either he tripped me or he didn't. Brendan has so much respect for the game that he's not going to ruin the integrity of the game by embellishing penalties. I mean, you do see, you think, oh, yeah, well, he's just pretending to be hurt. Hurt is one thing, embellishing is another. So, but, you know, if you're going to do that, you can say that about a lot of players that play in Portland and Spokane and throughout the league. You can't just name one player.
Right.
But,
that's why,
know,
I was...
To me, it was never intentional, ever, you know. After 4 years of watching that kid, it just wasn't intentional.
Did you get a sense that it bothered him that he had been branded that?
It bothered him that people thought he was a dirty player or a cheater, because he wasn't. And that hurt him more than the fact that he had to sit for a game. And for someone to think that he would cheat, that was worse than anything. That was worse than any punishment they gave him, was to think that people thought he was a cheater.
One other thing I want to touch on was the best of the West poll is sort of at one of the things that you're known for every year.
I wish I wasn't.
What's that? You wish you weren't?
I'll sell it to the highest bidder for nothing.
So you're saying it's a bit of a burden? Is that what you're saying?
You know, the thing is that I've been doing it for a long time, and I inherited it when I inherited the beat. And the first year I did it, I was really kind of clueless, and okay, this is the ballot, this is the whatever, and they give it back and you add all this up. Okay, fine. Well, then you're begging to get the ballot back. I kind of still have to do that a little bit. And, you know, then you get some sections like defensive forwards. Some teams just don't put anybody there. It's like, are you kidding me? You can't come up with four guys. So, you know, I can see when they leave the best referee thing blank.
So, a lot of that lately, apparently.
Out of all of the ballots I got last year, more than half left the referee thing blank, and some of them only put one or two names in there. That tells you a lot about what they think of the ref. but you know, when you get these back, and then you have to add them all up, and it takes like 3 or 4 computer, you know, programs to, you know, make it all work and the math work, because some teams may send back one ballot and some teams may send back 10. So it's a percentage-based thing. And then you know, once it's all done and you got to put your page together and then you have to get pictures and then you have to, you know, do everything. And it's very time consuming. Sometimes I'm thinking, I'm going to send each team one ballot, but you must fill out every single line. Kind of say, let's just do one, you know, and then every team is on equal footing. Every team sent back one ballot. This is it, you know. But when you ask the players to fill it out, you got players, GMs, coaches, and all this. When you see what the GMs and coaches vote, you see what the players vote, you know, and it's always usually how the players voted as to who wins because they play against these guys, you know. But, you know, it is, I mean, when the Victoria Cougars went to Prince George, somehow a guy named Eric Degerman, who covered the Americans then, said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll take that over, you know, kind of thing. And so, yeah, so for however long the Cougars have been in Prince George, we have had that poll. So, and it was the 25th anniversary of the poll last year. We haven't had it that long, but had a long run here. And every occasionally, you know, Tim Speltz or Bob Torrey or somebody will say, are we still doing this? And I'm like, unfortunately, yes. But begrudgingly, they do it, and they send it back. So it's a good exercise to do on the bus, you know, a good long bus ride. So, but
well, everybody, but, yeah. Everybody waits for it every year. So, you know, people are excited. You know, people want it. But I guess
I guess
this is a call. If anybody out there wants to do it instead of Annie, she's open to it.
Yeah, I'll put it on Craigslist. Free for the taking.
Free for the taking.
It's like 30 hours. Of work that you didn't expect that your boss is like, aren't you done with that yet? I'm like, really? So once, I mean, because if you've never done it and you think, oh, it probably just takes a couple of days, can't get a life because, you know, it's just, it's a little more involved than that. I mean, it's fun and it's kind of, you know, nice to see, you know, it in the end and it's on the page and done. But after that, it's kind of like, I hated that. That was just awful. I'm not doing this ever again. And the next year, here we go again. But I revised the ballot, so it's only front and back now. It used to be like 4 pages worth of stuff and all this stuff. So I streamlined it and made it, you know, we gave it a new look. And so it didn't seem to be as daunting as, you know, it used to seem. You know, oh my God, here's like 4 pages worth. And now, you know, you can scan it, email it. The guys can scan it back in and email it back. And that works a whole lot better, too, instead of mailing them or faxing them or, you know. So it has evolved as well. But, yeah. So if someone wants to volunteer to help, that's fine.
So when you send the ballots out, do you send the same exact number to every team?
Well, the Americans, I always just drop off like 10 or 12 ballots at the office. Here you go. But the other teams, especially last year, you know, I scanned it in, emailed it, and, you know, I said, please do, you know, I try for 5, you know, 5 to 10 copies, you know, they can make them on their own copy machine, hand them out, and then, you know, they can just scan them back in and ship them to me. That has worked a lot better than saying, well, we never received them in the email, or they never came through the fax, or whatever, you know, and so I email them out, I make a few calls to see if they got them, yeah, we did, okay, yeah. I don't have to do as much pleading now to get them back. So it makes it a little easier. So, but, you know, with everything, you know, sometimes it just wears out its welcome. But, you know, I do know that the people like it, the players like it. They might gripe about having to fill out the ballots, but I do know they like seeing how they stack up against their peers and stuff. So in the end, you know, when, you know, the players appreciate it, it kind of makes it, you know, worth its while. So.
Well, I know that the life of a junior hockey writer can be interesting in the off season. We had a Twitter exchange briefly in August when I was covering Little League softball, and you were covering rodeo. So,
I love the rodeo.
So,
rodeo and hockey go together.
Explain covering rodeo. I've never covered a rodeo. I have to admit, not a lot of that going on around here. But explain covering a rodeo to me.
Well, rodeo and hockey are similar. They're probably the two most underappreciated sports in the sporting world, except for maybe cricket. I'm not sure, but that's big in India. But here in the States, you know, it's, you know, you have the 7 events. You know, you have your bareback. You have the tie down. You have the steer wrestling. You have the saddle bronc riders. You have the team ropers. You have the barrel racers and you have the bull riding. And so there's anywhere from, you know, 8 to 15, 20 guys in an event per night at a rodeo, depending on where you're at, of course. You know, Calgary, Pendleton, they'll have more. But, you know, everybody gets a ride for 8 seconds, or you try and, you know, truss up your calf or, you know, drag down your steer and do as fast as time you can. And but, you know, when you talk to these guys, you know, they all have a story. And, you know, this year it just happened to be, you know, one guy, his car broke down. He borrowed a car from another guy, made it all the way to Montana. But he wanted to get here because he knew he had a really good horse to ride. And, you know, if you get a good horse and you can ride it, you can get some good points and big money. So he's in Montana, no car. He buys a car for $2,000 at some, you know, CD little car lot. It gets him here. He rides the horse. He gets first place. He wins overall at the end of, you know, the week. And, you know, in the end, he went home with almost $5,000. So, but, you know, they all have those interesting little stories to tell. You know, one bull rider broke his left hand. Well, it's his right hand he holds on with. So, you know, he waited a couple weeks for it to be more stable in his calf. And he was out there riding again. Guys who have torn ligaments in their knees or their ankles or whatever from getting thrown, you know what? They wait till they can walk again, and they're right back out there on those same horses. And I see the same guys every year a lot of times. And, you know, world champion ropers like Tuff Cooper, he's just a young kid. He's like 23 years old. But I've been covering him in rodeo since he was 18. Now we meet at a rodeo. He's got to give me a hug. Hey, how you doing? You know, you make those relationships. And, you know, it makes it a lot of fun. And it is an underappreciated sport. You know, the PETA people think the animals are abused, and trust me, they eat better, sleep better, and whatever than any cowboy traveling to the next rodeo. So, you know, these guys are like four to a car, a little car, you know, saving money, you know, helping each other out with meals if someone hasn't won in a while. And, you know, you get those hard luck cowboy stories too. You know, young guys are down to their last couple of dimes hoping to earn a couple of dollars here. Otherwise, they're going back home to work for a while to get back out on the road. And, you know, it's one of those sports that you don't make a lot of money at, but you do it for the love of it, you know, and that's the same with hockey. You don't make as much as they do in the NFL, the NBA, but God, they love it, and, you know, they'll take a pay cut to play it, and that's the way it works.
Well, that's cool.
And you can keep your little league softball.
I enjoy the little league softball. I do have to admit that.
I know you do.
I enjoy it. I coach softball.
I never had a daughter, so...
I don't either, you know, but I started coaching my niece, and I got kept getting roped into it, and I
you know, we all have our things. So, but yeah, I just, you know, to me, the athletes really make my job, you know, fun. And, you know, having a talk with Connor Rankin today, because I'll be featuring him for Saturday, you know, just from when he was 16 to now, and you've seen how much they've matured and how much the game has come along. And, you know, he played with and behind the Shinneman, Huseman's, Reddicks, and Fazers. And, you know, he kind of rode their coattails to a lot of good stuff. Well, now it's time for him to wear the coat. He's, I think, a little scared. No, I wouldn't say scared. Maybe a little nervous about the season starting. And he's kind of the go-to guy. But he'll make it work. He knows that those expectations are there of him. And, you know, he'll make it work. They always do. So, who thought Drew Ellis would be a good goalie? Who thought Chet Pickard would come in and just pick up where Carey Price left off? I mean, it happens every day. There's always that next guy on the bench that's going to come in and do his thing.
All right. Well, I actually have to move on to recording another one of these. So.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for doing it. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Annie.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks again to you, Annie, for joining me tonight. You can follow Annie on Twitter at TCHIceQueen. That is at TCHIceQueen. You can also read what she has to write about the Americans at SportsTriCities.com. Next episode, we are going to be talking about the Portland Waterhawks with Dylan Bumbarger of OregonLive.com. We will see you next time on the podcast. Thanks for listening.